Hello and welcome back to the podcast. It is always up to speed with Formula One. It is Sunday, October 10th. I was almost going to say 20th, but that's not even a real number. 2021. It is Canadian Thanksgiving weekend. It is also the after party, if you want to call it that, for the Turkish Grand Prix. So we're all rocking and rolling and having a good time here. You're listening to Mr. Mark Daly, Mr. Mark Hamilton. Mark, how's your weekend going? Enjoying? Are you getting ready for the big feast this afternoon?
Yeah, so great question, and thank you. We have had a fantastic weekend so far. We have tons of friends and family over. Of course, last year, Thanksgiving didn't really happen, or if it did, it was very COVID-friendly, so it's really great to have some friends and family around. We've been able to catch up on some films. Last night, we watched the new Space Jam film, which we all thoroughly enjoyed. Yeah, it's a visual feast. I love the sounds, the music. I don't know if I love the movie as much as the first one. And my little guy, who loved the first one and has watched it 7 or 8 times now, kind of tapped out. But it was good. So the weekend's been fantastic. And I think we're preparing our stomachs for the feast that lays ahead. But my weekend has been great. Now, do you do your Thanksgiving on the Sunday, or do you do yours on the Monday?
So what we typically do in our family is we do, like, anytime you have like a 3-day weekend like this, or like Easter as well, anytime that like the official holiday is like on the Monday, we tend to do the big feast on the Sunday, just so we have like a day to kind of like, you know, relax and kind of get ready for the week ahead on the Monday. So tomorrow is going to be nice and chill. The weather looks good. So I'm hoping I spent the afternoon cleaning up my bike and getting the drivetrain cleaned and lubed and all ready to go. That'll be able to go and get a ride in. But it was perfect to have the Turkish Grand Prix this morning, the perfect appetizer for the feast to come this afternoon. And as you so rightly said before we got started this just now, that there isn't there's not like a million things to talk about, but a very fascinating race nonetheless. And for 2 years in a row, we had a very slippery and wet and slick track at Istanbul, not as bad as last year, but it was very much a 180 flip for Valtteri Bottas. Last year, he just couldn't keep it on the track. This year, perfect weekend from start to finish. And it was a perfect result for Valtteri. I couldn't help but thinking that he is maybe racing without the pressure, the knowledge, knowing that that he's not going to be at Mercedes, obviously, at the end of this season. He's going to be going to Alfa Romeo. And I'm just wondering if this is maybe played into it a little bit. Of course, these are kinds of conditions that he likes, but very impressive from him. Max Verstappen coming home second, Sergio Perez coming home third. And Sergio, I'm going to give him a big shout out, because I think he really put up a phenomenal fight. He did what he needed to do. And as from a teammate point of view for Red Bull and for Max Verstappen, keeping himself between Lewis Hamilton and Max, that I guess at about 2/3 race distance when Lewis was closing him down. Really, really exciting series of turns there going through. It was at 10, 12, and 13, then along the pit straight, and then the pit stops and everything, but Sergio did not give an inch and then managed to hang on at the end there as well to get the podium. Of course, what we'll talk about the pit stops, but he did what he needed to do, not just for Max, but for the team. So he gets one of my nominations for driver of the day. I think Carlos Sainz had a very good outing, despite starting from the back with that replaced power unit in the Ferrari. But it was an interesting race. Not a lot of action at the front, but it had some very, very important implications for the championship. So we say that when we talk about that, we're sometimes a little bit guilty of not discussing the championship standing. So I'll let you give your thoughts while I pull up the drivers and constructors points here.
That's perfect cover, because that buys you about 17 minutes by handing it over to me. My thought after this race is it's kind of multi-pronged. The first thing is that I kind of feel like both Red Bull and Mercedes had a good weekend. And bear with me here. It's the first podium that Sergio Perez has scored since June, which is an eternity. We're talking 3.5, almost 4 months. So I'm sure for him, that takes an immense amount of pressure off going into the final 6 races of the season. I think Max was in a position where he started second on the grid and he finished second in the race. And I think that's ultimately a good result. And that said, I was very confident based on some of the things we've seen from Valtteri Bottas over the past 3 or 4 years that he probably wasn't going to be able to hold Max off after the first couple of corners. But not only did he do so, he ultimately put in what is absolutely his best performance of the season. And as much as you wanted to give some love to Sergio for a great result, I kind of want to lean back and reflect on Valtteri's performance over the course of the last couple of months, because really, with the exception of Hungary and Belgium, and that Belgium result really doesn't count because it should never have been classified. You look at his results since the Styrian Grand Prix: podium third, second place at the Austrian Grand Prix, third place at Silverstone, retirement at Hungary, which obviously we've litigated forever. He finishes on the podium at Zandvoort. He finishes on the podium at Italy. He finishes fifth in Russia, where he's had some success in the past. And then he scores a race win here. He has 9 podiums now in 16 race classifications this year, which is a really strong result when you consider, A, Monaco was stolen from him because obviously there was the issue with the pneumatic gun in the pit. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, he was taken out by George Russell and Imola. So it feels like Valtteri is putting together an exceptionally strong campaign. And ultimately, if Mercedes win the Constructors' Championship, he deserves all the flowers in the world for making that happen. Because if you index his performances against Sergio, clearly he's been the better driver this year. But ultimately, I'm not upset with the performance of either team this weekend. And we're absolutely going to get into and talk about the entire situation around strategy team by team. But ultimately, I thought this was a good result for both teams this weekend. And maybe having said that, you can kind of tee up the classification and we can look at the current standings.
Well, I'll do the kind of the current standings because I got those ready. Of course, the big question here was everybody, of course, with only half a dozen races to go, it's Max and Lewis. The championship was it was dead tight. It was only 2 points separating the two coming into this race. So Max finishing second, Lewis finishing fifth today. Max now 263 points, because remember, on this show, we round up to the nearest whole number or down, but well, we're not rounding down from 0.5. We're rounding up. 263, Lewis 257. So there's a bit of a gap between them now. Valtteri 177. So he's kind of picked up, reflective of the season that he's had. Lando Norris for McLaren 145, and Sergio Perez. This is where the big gap is, especially in the constructors. Sergio, after 17 races, only 135 points. Now, if you look at the constructors, this is where it gets interesting, because there's a significant amount of daylight now between Mercedes and Red Bull. And again, rounding up to the nearest whole point, because we don't do half points on the show, 434 for Mercedes, 398 for Red Bull. I mean, there are plenty of points left on offer here over the next half dozen races before we get to Yas at the end of the season. But still, Red Bull, they're going to need more races like this. And it's come to the point now that Mercedes is going to have to give away some points and Red Bull is going to have to pick them up. And now, historically, Mercedes does not give up many points at all from both cars. Both drivers, regardless who's been in that team, have always brought home a ton of points. So Red Bull, I would have to say, are probably feeling the heat, feeling the pressure that this constructors might be starting to get away from them a little bit. The indications have been there for a while. This should not be really news to anybody that's been watching this championship closely over the past several months. McLaren and Ferrari, still a really, really good battle going on. McLaren 240 points, compared to 233 or 232.5 for Ferrari. So this could be interesting for that third and final spot in the constructors. And then Alpine, fifth in the constructors, and they have 104 points. So, I should just read out the final race classification, because I've got everything all topsy turvy. But everything really does hinge on the drivers' championship. That's where we're all looking. Like I said, podium was Bottas, Verstappen, Perez, Charles Leclerc just missing out on the podium. I think Charles really had a good race this afternoon. Obviously, took a bit of a gamble, and that was interesting too, just because the track never really dried out, and we'll talk more about this, because it really came down to strategy and tactics today. Charles coming home fourth, Lewis fifth after starting 11th after incurring a grid penalty, Pierre Gasly in sixth, Lando Norris seventh, which was a real surprise considering how strong he was in Russia a couple of weeks ago, Carlos Sainz, my driver of the day, finishing eighth after starting at the back of the grid, Lance Stroll ninth, a nothing weekend, a nothing outing for Lance. And, you know, I want to talk about that in a minute. And then Esteban Ocon rounding out the top 10 for the Alpine. Now, right off of the start, before we talk about that, there were a couple of interesting things happened. And that was Fernando Alonso trying to touch every single car that he could. Obviously, him going off in turn one was not really his fault. He got tagged on the left rear tire by Pierre Gasly, who was ultimately given a 5-second penalty for that, which I thought was a little bit harsh.
And two penalty points.
Yeah, good point. Yep. Which I thought was a little bit harsh because he was sandwiched a little bit. I thought he, you know, at least from, I haven't gone back and watched the replay 5 or 6 times, but at least the replay I saw, thought he tried to, you know, give him as much room as he could, but ultimately I guess the stewards thought otherwise. And then Fernando later on in the lap, hitting Mick Schumacher and then forcing him off of the track, he gets a 5-second penalty. And Fernando never really recovered. I mean, I think he dropped down to 18th or 19th. He only recovered to 16th after all that. So I don't know if he had any damage on the car, but that was surprising. And I was really wondering whether that was going to set the tone for the day. We did see a couple other incidents of drivers coming very close. So the only other one that we saw that was really sort of a significant, there was quite a few, but there wasn't as much, crashing and banging as I thought there was going to be. And that was the only two incidents that actually warranted a penalty, which was interesting from my point of view.
Absolutely. And that Gasly incident is an interesting one because typically, and I think this is probably good context for a lot of our listeners, typically with the volume of cars that are squeezing into that first corner, the stewards typically take a very hands-off approach to litigating contact in the first corner on the first lap of a race. And in this case, originally they had indicated that he was largely at fault for the incident, but ultimately ended up clarifying and indicating that actually, no, upon review, he was wholly at fault and he wasn't sandwiched. So that's ultimately where the penalty came from. I'm not surprised that he got the 5 seconds, given the fact that there really weren't any other cars that were involved in altering the trajectory of his direction. But I was a little bit surprised that they ultimately provided him, or gifted him, as you could say, those two penalty points. It was also good to see after the race, to see Alonso make purposeful effort to contact Mick Schumacher. I thought that was a nice touch as well. Mm-hmm. But you're right. I think off the jump, I was expecting a greasy, slippery track. I was expecting to see a safety car. I was expecting to see an absolute slew of DNFs. But really, for the 11th time in the history of Formula One, and I don't count Belgium. To me, that should never have been classified. It wasn't a result. But if you exclude Belgium, this was just, I think, the 11th Grand Prix in the history of the sport where we didn't see a DNF. And to not see a DNF on a really wet, greasy, unpredictable track like this was a bit of a surprise.
Well, you would have thought that somebody would have crashed into somebody else, damaging some bodywork. Somebody would have gone off, hit maybe the tires, or something like that, or got stuck in the gravel. You know, there's so many different things that could have happened. And I mean, I think you raise a really good point that despite the conditions, we didn't see a safety car, which is kind of interesting. But it was rather strange weather. And I guess if you live where we live, I think that you would recognize the type of drizzle that it was, that it was raining hard enough just to make everything wet on the road and to make it damp enough so it wouldn't dry out. And ultimately we didn't see that racing line, that dry portion of the track really appear to maybe the last 10 laps, maybe right, a dozen laps. And that's usually very unusual because usually when we see a race start like that, where it's not a torrential downpour like Belgium, that race that wasn't a race, and why we always say we don't do half points on the show, even though I'm being put on blast in the live chat for saying that I remind people of that. So I'm going to remind them once more that I think half points are stupid. But anyways, that's a different thing. But, you know, joking aside, usually when we don't have a torrential downpour, once they get out there on the inters, you usually start to see the racing line dry up after about 10, 15 laps or so. And that's why it was interesting, because they were saying on the race commentary about lap 18 was that sort of magic mark where they were expecting maybe the life of the inters to go away. And that's when they might start see people going in. But ultimately, the drivers were doing, I think, a good job, all of them, trying to use the moisture on the track to keep the tire temperatures down. And it was interesting, too, because Danny Ricciardo was that one real benchmark when he came in, because he was really struggling in that first half of the race. And I guess the big question was, when he went into the pits, was he going to go onto slicks? Because even watching on television, it just didn't look like that was going to be the right thing. But the radio communication between Danny Rick and the pits was, you know, can you go faster on a new set of inters? He said definitely. He went in, and it was interesting how they go through this graining phase. They go into the pit, you know, they come out from their pit stops, and then they get the tires would start to degrade, and then they would start to struggle, and then they come back, and ultimately you saw as the further that Ricciardo went on those tires, the better that he actually started to do. But I was surprised how long the front runners raced, or how long that they went. And it was very fascinating, because I was initially very impressed to see how quickly Lewis was carving his way through the field. But I got to give a big shout out to Yuki Tsunoda, who kept Lewis behind him for what, 7-8 laps, which was basically the highlight of his race. So I don't know if he was I'm sure there must have been some sort of informal communication of, you know, do one for the big team, you know, do us a favor, make sure you keep Lewis behind. Or maybe it's just implied or understood, but it was interesting how he just he needed that amount of time to get about or get around Yuki Tsunoda. And it was a great pass the way that that he got him. And that's why I was going to say afterwards that I was very disappointed with Lance Stroll on the weekend that he had, because I mean, you know, the only time I really saw Lance in the entire race, and we're homers when it comes to the Canadian guys on the show, obviously, was when Lewis passed him, and how it was a non-event. And then you just knew that for Lewis, the further he got up in the field, the harder it was going to be. And especially when he got past the AlphaTauris, and then you know, getting up to the Red Bull and the Ferrari and everything. So I think that Lewis probably feels like a podium got away from him. But let's talk about the strategy now, because that is where it all hinged. And I think that the way that Red Bull timed it and got their pit stop and brought both of their cars in was fascinating, because Checo held up Lewis, and then eventually he got around, right? And then Max came in. He had an exceptionally good pit stop of 2.1 seconds, I think it was. I think that even the cameraman in the pits was giving a fist pump after that, you know, how impressive it was. And then Checo comes in afterwards, and then they kind of put Mercedes, they put Lewis into this this bit of this no man's land. It's like, what do we do now? Lewis obviously wanted to stay out. He probably could have done. And then ultimately they pulled him in at the end. That didn't work out. His tires, very much like we saw with everybody else who put on a fresh set of inters, that they would go away from them. And then, you know, by the time they kind of went through this bit of degradation, sorry about that, need more coffee, then the tires would come back. But it looked like very much in those last several laps that Lewis was really under threat there from Pierre Gasly, who ultimately drove the wheels off that car to stay ahead of Gasly and Lando Norris to really limit the damage. But certainly I think that Red Bull got it spot on, their pit stops and their strategy, getting P2 and P3. Mercedes got it right for Bottas, or at least that side of the garage did. And Lewis and his team just did not get it right. And ultimately he hemorrhaged some points, gave some points away to Max that he'll feel that he shouldn't have.
I have some very, very thorough thoughts on this subject, and my sense is we should probably take a break first, given that we're approaching the 20-minute mark.
Oh, good. Well spotted, sir. You know, I'm the one that's supposedly like driving it from the production side, and I completely spaced on that. But very good. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back, and we will discuss further here on the podcast. It is always Up to Speed with Formula One. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Okay, welcome back. You're listening to Mark Daly and Mark Hamilton breaking down the 2021 Turkish Grand Prix. So we've gotten into the part of the discussion now where we're Red Bull v. Mercedes, and not even Red Bull v. Mercedes, but Red Bull versus Lewis Hamilton, because only 50% of Mercedes got their pit strategy right today. And I know you have an encyclopedia worth of notes there, Mr. Hamilton. So why don't you take it away? And by the way, you know, props to you for showing up to a Sunday morning live stream as presentable as you do, because full disclosure here, you know, I've got the hoodie on, I haven't shaved, I've got the PJs on here, but hey, Sunday fun day. Anyways, take it away, sir.
Dude, full disclosure, I haven't shaved in 2 weeks. I don't have that, that innate ability to grow facial hair. And also, as I declared at the beginning of the podcast, I am not wearing pants today because it is Sunday. TMI. So I will be wearing boxers as long as I can, as long as my family will tolerate it. But I think watching the post-race show, Sam Collins had made a comment that there were a few teams that got strategy really, really well today, and there's a few teams that got it really, really wrong. The teams that did well, obviously, to your point, Mercedes with Bottas, perfect. Red Bull with Sergio, perfect. Red Bull with Max, perfect. Maybe it felt like they went a little bit wrong, but for the reason I'm going to explain in a couple of moments, it ultimately worked out perfectly. Teams that were really off the mark when it came to strategy included, and you spoke to this a few minutes ago, McLaren with Daniel Ricciardo. Now, at least the good news is, in terms of managing the chemistry and the culture of that team, was it was an agreeable decision. It was a collaborative decision that Daniel Ricciardo was in on that decision, but ultimately coming in that early wasn't a good play, because by the end of the race, based on the aero setup of that car and because of Daniel's driving style, those tires had dropped off of a cliff and he was struggling badly by the end of the race. The other big miss that we should probably address on the podcast today is, not only did Lance have a very poor showing as far as I'm concerned, but once again, you saw a situation where Aston made a really bad strategy call. And they, again, collaboratively, because we could hear it on the radio, they were openly discussing whether they should bring Seba in for slicks, was they brought Sebastian Vettel in and they put him on slicks at a time when it was clear to everybody that no Formula One car in this race had any business being on slicks. They put him on slicks, which he agreed to, that he agreed was the right move. They put him out and he had a huge amount of trouble navigating a single lap. They bring him back in. He spins on the entry road into the pit, is very lucky he didn't make contact with the wall and break his rear suspension. Mm-hmm. They put him back on intermediates and his race is over. Now, what I liked about Sebastian Vettel is, during the post-race interviews, he very much acknowledged that it was a wee decision. It was a wee decision. It was a wee decision. We threw away our race based on that decision. Now, there has been times in the past where a team will take this risk and they'll put a track or car out on slicks only to see the track dry up. And because you're the first one out there, you don't have to subsequently pit again. And it puts you in a really good position. We've seen actually Lance benefit from such strategy calls in the past. But in this case, it was the wrong call. Ocon, this was really curious for really maybe the first time in the hybrid era, at least the first time since 2016, we saw a driver stay out with the same tire for the entire lap or for the entire race, which was really cool to see. But, and this kind of ties into the Lewis comments, which we'll get to in a couple of minutes. During the post-race interviews, Ocon acknowledged that, hey, you know what? We managed to stay out with that one set of tires for the entire race. We managed to finish in the points barely. They finished 10th, but he was very clear that had they stayed out for a single additional lap, he was expecting a tire failure. He was very, very clear that it was lucky they were fortunate. And part of this could be dramatic, speaking to reporters and trying to build up the suspense of what had happened. But he'd indicated that, yeah, he expected that if they had stayed out for a single additional lap based on his feel of those tires, that they were probably going to suffer a tire failure. So they may have been a little bit lucky. Now, the other one, and this is, I think, what we really want to get into, and this is going to be the meat of the show, is the Lewis Hamilton tire decision. And we get criticized constantly, even though you're a Red Bull fan, we get criticized constantly for being Lewis Hamilton homers and being Mercedes homers. And I'm going to be very, very clear on this one, that I did not like what I saw and heard out of Lewis today. I am all for drivers expressing dissatisfaction and just expressing frustration. I like to see that. I like to see that they care. And I'd like to see more of this out of drivers like Lance Stroll. But I didn't love what I saw out of Lewis today. And I think ultimately, if he had pitted when he was first asked to pit, they probably would have been in a much better position. And this goes back to the fact, and I leaned into a tire expert that spends a lot of time chatting with us via the Twitter DM, and he'd articulated very much like you did a couple minutes ago, that in these kind of wet, greasy conditions, these intermediate tires have a very interesting journey in their lifespan, which is you go out, they're fresh out of the tire blankets, they're scorching hot, although not overheating, they're scorching hot, and you put in one really great lap, which is what happened with Lewis when he did eventually go in. The problem then is all that heat comes out of the tire and they crater, the performance craters, and they go through this graining period where they start to shed a lot of those blocks of tread on the tire. And in doing so, they don't have a lot of heat at this point, although you're starting to build up that heat again. You don't have a lot of heat in those tires and they're graining and you lose a ton of traction, especially in the corners. Now, once you get to that point where you've shed a lot of those tread blocks, they become this hybrid intermediate, hybrid slick. And that's where the drivers want these tires to be. But it can take 8 or 9 or 10 laps to get to that stage where, hey, we've got good heat in the tires. They've degrained significantly. They're in that kind of sweet spot. And Lando Norris talked about this during the post-race interview as well, which is, hey, you get these intermediates to a point where they're kind of a hybrid slick. That's where you want them to be. But the problem is Lewis came in so late in the race, he never had the opportunity to get his second pair of intermediates into that sweet spot. And the other thing, and I cannot wait to hear your thoughts on this, but the other thing that I really didn't like was, I get it, during the race, you hear some really raw audio from the drivers. But after the race, he was interviewed and he said the following: I should have stayed out. My gut feeling was to stay out. I should have stayed out. I'm frustrated in myself for not following my gut. I work as a team, so I did the best I could with the advice I was given. And then the follow-up question to this was, hey, what do you think of Valtteri's performance today? Knowing as well, and to put this into perspective, it's not just that Valtteri scored a win, it's just that Valtteri kept Max off the podium, and had Max scored a win, well, he didn't keep off the podium, he kept them off the top step of the podium. But had he not won the race himself, Max would have won the race and picked up an additional 7 points. So the lead would be 13 points instead of 6 points. So when he was asked about Bottas, very quietly, sheepishly looking away from the cameras, he said, and I quote, "Good job. Great job."
Yeah. You know, that's not really the greatest sportsmanship. I mean, Bottas did a great job there for Mercedes today. I mean, like you say, I mean, he did Lewis a big assist by keeping Max in second place. I mean, Max just did not have the pace to keep up with Bottas all day long. So, I mean, he keeps Max takes home 18 points instead of 25. So, you know, there's 7 points that he took out of Max's pocket that directly benefits his teammate. But also this thing, you know, you either win as a team or you lose as a team, right? And I kind of hate this sort of thing that, you know, it's just like, I don't like to hear things like that because, you know, it is a team sport. Yeah, okay, fine. You know, you felt like you should have stayed out, but you didn't. I mean, ultimately, you know, you guys made that decision to go in. I mean, you know, just deal with it, accept it. You know, it is what it is. You know, it didn't work out too bad. I mean, you still have six races to do something about it. But, you know, what I thought was very interesting about his tires, though, was that when you saw how angry and how worn some of the other tires were that were coming off some of these other cars, they were very, very worn. They weren't only just bald, but they were very, very worn. And that's why I think it was very interesting that you brought up the point about these sort of hybrid intermediate slash slick tires, because Lewis's tires, and of course, I only got a really, really brief look at it in the pit stop like everybody else, but most of the tread blocks were worn off of them, but they looked very, very slick, right? They didn't look like they were really chewed out. They didn't look like they were really blistering. They didn't like, you know, exactly. weren't in the same situation that you were talking about as Esteban Ocon, who admitted that, you know, had he gone another lap, that he was looking at an imminent tire failure. So, I mean, it is one thing to say that you should have stayed out, but the other thing is that the team also has the benefit of looking at the telemetry, looking at the information and knowing exactly where those tires are. Of course, he's got the benefit of being in the car and feeling the car underneath him, feeling how those tires are performing. So you got to kind of weigh one against the other. Ultimately, it didn't work out. I mean, yeah, he's obviously upset because he probably feels like a podium at least got away from him. But at the end, you know, he did stay out a couple laps longer because they told him box. He said he was going to stay out another lap, you know, probably was another two laps. And they said, you know, you got to come in right now or else, you know, this window that we have to Gasly, it just isn't going to be there. And he really only hung on to that spot by the, you know, the skin of his teeth. And who knows how burned out those tires were, because I think that he was just driving the wheels off of that Mercedes those last couple of laps, you know, when that tire performance started to go away from him, just to keep ahead of Gasly, because you know, if Gasly didn't get him, then Lando was right there. I mean, there was two guys that were in a position to make a move on him if he was struggling anymore to possibly gobble up that spot. So, I mean, he got fifth, could have been sixth, could have been second, seventh. But I mean, on the flip side, could have been anywhere as high as third. So it's a very strange afternoon for Lewis and where he ended up, right?
Let me ask you a question. If you're on the pit wall, mm-hmm. at that race, given the closing stages and given the fact that you should probably have some understanding of how these tires wear, do you keep Lewis out? Did they not make the right decision?
I think that Red Bull forced them into reacting because they brought in Max, they brought in Sergio right away. If I was a Mercedes and I was Lewis Hamilton, I would have brought him in the very next lap, knowing that he'd come through 11th. He put a lot of, even though the tires look pretty good, I mean, they put a lot of action and energy through those tires to that point in the race. And I'm thinking, okay, maybe I'm not on for a win today. Maybe I'm not on for a P2, but, you know, I want to stay as close as possible to Max Verstappen in the championship. And because remember, I mean, he only had a 2-point lead going into this race. I'm maybe sacrificing the perfect result today with the medium to long-term goal of a vision looking down the road to where am I going to be at Yas Marina in about 2 months from now, right? So I'm thinking, okay, today might not be the result that we really want, which is going to be a win. We're not going to put a ton of daylight between ourselves and Max and open up a gap in the championship. I think you kind of have to look at it as damage mitigation. And I would have gone in right after Max, try and come out ahead of Sergio and maybe give up that position, but just limit the amount of points that I'm going to lose to Max. That's what I would have done.
Yeah, I agree completely. I also don't necessarily criticize Mercedes for bringing Hamilton in when they did at the end.
No.
I agree. I think ideally, in hindsight, they absolutely should have done exactly what you described, which was bring him in much later. I think the risk is that even though his tires didn't look terrible, and I think from the brief glimpses that you and I both saw during the broadcast and during the post-race shows, they weren't showing a ton of blistering, that you weren't starting to see the carcass show through the compound. They seem to be in good condition, but I think ultimately their data, their telemetry, and everybody back at Mission Control, let's remember as well that it's not just the folks on the pit wall that are making these strategy calls. They may have dozens of people back at their factory that are sitting at Mission Control running mm-hmm. every possible scenario, modeling every possible scenario out. And I think their data told them that, look, if we leave him out, best case scenario is he's not going to score a podium. He's going to be passed by at least two drivers, and he's probably going to finish fifth. And the risk is, if he stays out, what if he has a tire failure? So I think they looked at that and they thought, look, best case, if we keep him out, he's probably going to finish fifth, but there's a high risk of a tire failure. If we bring him in, he's going to finish fifth, and there's less of a risk of a tire failure. So I think ultimately, when you consider what they were forced to do based on the timelines and the progress with respect to the race, I think they did the right thing. But to your point, he should have been in much earlier, and they never should have been forced to make this decision. I wouldn't have left him out, because I think the data clearly showed that given the gap in lap over lap performance versus him and the two cars that have finished ahead of him, ultimately, he was never going to finish on the podium anyways, and that this was the safe bet, because if you leave him out, there's that risk of a tire failure, and maybe he scores no points at all, and that delta, that gap in the WDC, grows exponentially greater and puts him in a far more problematic position going into the final six races of the championship.
You know, I just want to leave one thought here before we take one final break and then start to close it down, is that I think that Formula One is such a fascinating sport. But 2 weeks ago, we were talking about, almost this exact same situation, but with McLaren and Lando, just to, how long, it took for them to reach a decision. I mean, of course, they were dealing with the torrential downpour in those last couple of laps. They weren't feeding enough information to the driver. The driver saying, no, I can stay out. And it was a very, very similar situation. And I think that, very much like, 2 weeks ago in Russia, where somebody on the pit wall, be it Seidel, be it whoever, should have said, Lando, you're coming in right now. This is what we need to do. But they didn't. And of course, they paid the price for it. And I think today that just the way that that Red Bull and props to them for forcing Mercedes and specifically Lewis and his engineers to be in that position to react to them to the double stop from Sergio and Max Verstappen, because I mean it was a bit of a risky move the way that they did it, but I mean, like you said earlier, it ultimately worked out for them, and then it put them in that weird situation. But very much like McLaren 2 weeks ago, somebody needed to make a call. Either Lewis needed to make that call to either stay out or come in, or they needed to make that call in the pits and say, no, Lewis, this is what we have based on the data. You need to come in right now. But, they just kind of let it fester for a little bit, and it cost them track position, cost them a podium, cost them points. And of course, it's not a huge gap in the championship, but we are running out of races. We're running out in the championship, and who knows? I mean, there's a lot of things can happen over the remaining half dozen races, which the next one is COTA in 2 weeks' time, which is awesome. Anyways, we'll be back in just a moment to close it down, give some final thoughts. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. With its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro. Easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Okay, well, welcome back for the final segment of a very unusual, but rather pleasant Sunday morning live stream here on the podcast. Is always up to speed with Formula One. It's actually kind of nice, but I was a little bit shocked that you said for the first time this season, you didn't actually get up to watch this one live. And full disclosure, I never do.
On the air.
I'm horrible, aren't I? But, I never watch it live unless it's in our time zone or some of the races in the Far East or in Australia that seemed to work out, quite well. I'm terrible. I'm very lazy. So I have a lot of respect for the effort that you put in to get up and watch them live. So, any final thoughts, Mark, on this one? I mean, like we said, there wasn't a lot of action at the front there with between Bottas and Max. Bottas, very solid weekend. I think he can go home with his head held high. Max, I think, obviously will take the second place and the points that he got there. And Checo, like I said, I thought he had a good race. He defended and did what he needed to do for his team teammate and for the team when required. And ultimately, I think if you're Valtteri Bottas, Max Verstappen and Red Bull, I think they're very happy. And Lewis Hamilton and his side of the garage are going to have a sit down and a good long chat and regroup and get this thing right for the last six races of the season.
Yeah, and kind of like I said, when we kicked off the podcast, to me, there might be a little bit of negativity and strain on the Mercedes side because obviously Lewis wasn't happy that he was brought in. But I ultimately think this weekend was a good result for both teams. And just as Max was in a position of damage mitigation last week, Lewis was in the same situation this week. And obviously he didn't have the same type of penalty as Max, and he wasn't able to recover as much ground as Max did. And the reason his penalty obviously wasn't as severe is because he only changed his internal combustion engine as opposed to all of the hybrid power unit componentry that typically gets kind of classified as that power unit. But to me, I still think it was a good weekend for Red Bull. To score a double podium was fantastic. And like I said, the first podium for Sergio since June. I think it was a fantastic weekend for Mercedes in the sense that Lewis was able to complete a race. He went from 11th to 5th. He scored some points. And Valtteri scored a race win, his first of the season, and it continues to put together what's becoming an increasingly solid, not exceptional campaign, but is continuing to put together a fairly solid campaign. I think the last comment I want to add, and this is a comment that Sam Collins had made during the post-race show as well, and you kind of touched on it earlier, that it's surprising that there weren't more instances of damage and DNF during the race. And he'd made a really interesting comment, and I'm going to unpack from it a little bit, but he made a comment that oftentimes when you see a little bit of contact between two cars, particularly when they're battling for position in a corner, you'll see a little bit of corner, maybe it's wheels rubbing, but ultimately you may see a DNF or maybe a double DNF because of that. And it's because cars typically suffer from suspension or steering componentry damage. And a lot of that's just the fact that when these cars are pushed off of their trajectory on a dry track, there are significant forces when suddenly that car is rotating and that tire is gripping at a unexpected trajectory. And that puts a huge amount of force on the suspension and a huge amount of force on the steering componentry. And oftentimes that causes damage. So sometimes when you see a little bit of contact on a dry track, you might expect to see more frequency of suspension damage, which would lead to a DNF because they're not going to be able to repair that. His point here was typically when the wet track is really wet and greasy like this, if there's contact, because there's less friction between the tire and the ground below, the cars just spin and there's less force on the suspension. So I thought that was an interesting point because early in the race, when we saw that contact between Gasly and Alonso, you might expect during a dry race that Alonso would retire because of suspension damage because of the forces that were applied to the suspension. So I just thought that was worth sharing. Other than my thoughts on the race, and there's a ton of other things that we could talk about, your earlier point, kudos to Sainz. He put in a terrific finish to finish in the points, to finish P8. We could probably spend a little bit of time unpacking the disappointing finish, I think, for McLaren. Of course, they were on top of the world 2-3 Grand Prix ago when we were in Monza, but I think maybe we can save that for the Thursday show. And then just a couple of news stories that kind of filtered in over the course of the last couple of days. It doesn't look like we're going to China in 2022, which will open an opportunity for a couple of races. Maybe we see Imola on the calendar in lieu of China next year. In the spirit of talking about mental health, given the fact that it's World Mental Health Day, and we talked about this last Thursday, Toto Wolff has quoted that the F1 rules, and this is by Autosport, F1 rules should be changed to ensure staff rotation to ease calendar pressure as we go into the world of 23, 24, and 25 race calendars. That is fantastic to hear. That's the right approach.
Yep.
Whereby motorsport.com is quoting Tost as saying, F1 staff unhappy with a 23 race calendar should, quote unquote, should go. So a slightly different approach there.
Well, I think that, you know, if that's his opinion, then I think that that comment should be flipped around. You know, if that's the mentality he's going to have as a team principal, you know, that's not how you treat your people. And, you know, that is actually a pretty BS and a pretty stupid comment by Franz Tost.
Totally
you know, that's I have no respect for that. And that that has no place in, you know, in modern society. I mean, mental health is as important as anything else. I just wanted to add on to one thing you were just talking about there, just before you just added on a couple of those other points. I thought it was kind of cool some of the telemetry that they added on for the race today, especially for some of these cars that had the cameras sort of in on the front nose, just to the left side of the front wing, and how they had the some of the telemetry sort of superimposed in front of the car on the track itself. And I thought it was pretty cool, especially when you get through those series of snappy corners at the end of the lap there. I think it's corners 12, 13, and 14, the right, left, right, whatever it is, left again, that brings you back into start finish. That was pretty amazing that even in those slippery conditions, that going through those corners, and they look so slow when they go through like these chicanes on any track in Formula One. But I thought it was kind of interesting going through that series of corners. They're still doing about 50, 60 miles an hour, 80, 100 kilometers an hour in the wet. And it just is impressive, just the amount of grip that these cars have, modern Formula One cars, to go through corners like that. Because let's face it, 50, 60 miles an hour, that's the kind of speed that you and I are doing on our normal road car on the highway, right? And these guys are doing it in a Formula One car on the, quote unquote, slowest part of the circuit. So, you know, that it might not have been the fastest lap that we ever seen at Turkey today. It might not have been the fastest Turkish Grand Prix, but still in the conditions, still amazing performance. But like you said, there is a ton of other things that we could talk about today and every day. I mean, let's face it, we could probably do this show 5 days a week if somebody would only pay us to do that. So nudge, nudge, wink, wink to the powers that be. Anyways, on behalf of myself and Mr. Hamilton here, I want to deputize all of you as honorary Canadians this afternoon. Go out. If you're not going to have a Thanksgiving turkey dinner, go out, celebrate, because it's Sunday. We're all here. We're all together as a Formula One community. Go out, have a wonderful Saturday, Sunday afternoon. If you're in Canada or celebrating, Thanksgiving, of course, happy Thanksgiving, especially to all our frontline workers, especially to all of those
Absolutely.
Who put their lives in their line in the military and whatnot, who are away from their families, and everybody that may be celebrating away from their families as well, who their profession keeps them away from home. On behalf of myself and Mr. Hamilton and from the entire Formula One community here at Scuderia F1, happy Thanksgiving. We'll be back in a couple of days with our slightly larger and looser pants, probably not as slightly as large and loose as they were a couple of days ago. But hey, you know, tomorrow's a new day. We can start exercising again. So we're going to indulge and enjoy it. Anyways, that is it. That is a wrap. Thank you very much for tuning in this afternoon. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all the reviews that you've left for us on Apple Podcasts, etc. That really does help keep the show visible and helps grow the community. It's a lot of fun and we really enjoy it. If you want to get in touch, best way to do so is on Twitter, and you can find us there at Scuderia F1 Pod. And if you want to drop us a line, by all means, do so. You can send us an email at scuderiaf1pod@gmail.com. And that's it. That's a wrap. Have a wonderful rest of the weekend, and we'll catch you again Thursday night. That's it. Bye for now.